Our next guest on Downtown is an actor, director. You have seen him on television shows like Dr. Death, FBI Most Wanted, Designated Survivor, Manifest. He is in the midst of doing a play in New York City right now where he plays Capulet in a production of Romeo and Juliet. But he joins us today as the former producing artistic director at Penobscot Theater Company as we continue to celebrate their 50th anniversary. We welcome back our friend Mark Torres. Hello there, Mark.
Hi, Rich. What a pleasure to be back with you and your listeners in the greater Bangor area.
Can you tell us a little bit about this production of R&J?
Yeah, sure. It's at a little theater called The Curtain, and they are devoted to Shakespeare's work. And I did a production of Hamlet with them a few years ago. And then I think rather ingeniously during the pandemic, rather than just shut down, they devised a way to do recorded Shakespeare productions in sort of the radio drama mode. And so they got in really sophisticated sound people who came up with a lot of different, sort of Foley sound effects and things. And we did, I was involved in that as well for two productions, a production of The Tempest and a production of Julius Caesar, that, like if there was the storm in The Tempest, they had really good storm sounds, or like a battle with swords and shields in Julius Caesar, and horses and you name it, they did. And so anyway, this little company is small but mighty. And this production of Romeo and Juliet is set in the Jazz Age, right after World War I.
Oh, nice.
And so it's a kind of interesting tension, between the older generation that is more the sort of late Victorian Edwardian types, of which my character is representative, and then the younger, wilder kids who want to do what they want to do, represented by, of course, primarily Romeo and Juliet. And so the women wear sort of flapper outfits, and the young men wear the suits of the day, and then we old folks are in sort of the more Edwardian swallowtail coat type looks. So it's fun.
That sounds wonderful. Well, you've got a performance tonight, so just mark it here with us this afternoon.
Okay.
Well, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Penobscot Theater, and you are such a big part of that history. You first came to the theater in 1992, but you were telling me you almost came here even earlier than that.
I did. I was one of the finalists a few years prior to my coming there, and they went with the other guy, Joe Turner Cantu, who I, in the funny small world way of the theater, I actually knew. He was based in Houston prior to going to Bangor, and I was in Dallas prior to going to Bangor. And, even though Houston and Dallas are not particularly close, as you know, theater communities can kind of transcend geography a little bit. And so I actually knew Joe a little bit from when we were both working in theater in Texas.
Well, what drew you to Bangor? What was attractive about the position at Penobscot Theater?
I'll tell you what it was, and I'm genuine about this. It was the people. And I had kind of an inside track due to this situation that I was just describing, where I was one of the finalists when the board chose to go with Joe. But that meant I came to Bangor. I met Laurie Schweikert and Maria Kreilkamp and other people who were on the board. Mim Hart was chief among those people, who made such a strong impression on me about the community. I was only there a couple of days. Cushing Samp was another member of that initial group that I met. And then they made their choice, and it wasn't me. And so I went on with my life. And then when, after a few years, Joe left, I had actually stayed in touch with Mim Hart, in a sort of pen pal way. And and I was, at a kind of a weird crossroads in my own life. And so I said, I'd like to reapply. And so I did. And once again, I was brought back to Bangor to interview. And I interviewed, and they this time asked me to join them to lead the theater.
What were the biggest challenges you had to deal with coming in?
I think the like a lot of arts organizations, there were financial challenges, and so we had to sort out the theater owed a lot of money, frankly, at that point. And so one of our intrepid board members sat down, and we literally did a kind of a triage of who we owed money to, and it was like, well, these people can close us down, like the IRS or the bank that holds the note on the building. These people can kill us. These people can make our lives hell, and these people, we don't need to worry about them so much. So we literally sort of triaged it and said, okay, let's deal with the heavy hitters first. And we, worked our way through and eventually got all of our bills paid and everything kind of sorted and began to build on a basis that, we did an interesting thing. A terrific guy who's no longer with us, Stan Marshall, he and I were involved in a strategic planning process, and he brought in someone, and we sat with the board and really worked to strategize how we would rebuild. And one of the things we did was to really question whether or not the theater had the community's support and whether or not it was viable in that way. And of course, obviously, we came to the conclusion that it was, but we gave it the benefit of, the real benefit of scrutiny. Like, does the community want this organization? And, it's a hard question to ask yourself because it means, if they don't, if we do the work and realize, well, they don't really care, then right, we should close it down, So anyway, obviously, the theater is thriving because the community does care. But we ask those hard questions in that process.
We're talking with Mark Torres here on Downtown, where you expanded the subscriber base. Certainly, the budget grew tremendously. And you made the decision, too, to be more of a regional professional theater company, bringing in talent from really all around the nation.
Yeah. We started, just sort of reaching down to Portland a little bit. I remember going and joining in with some theaters down there that were doing a what's called a common audition, where people come in and they do like a 90-second monologue. And so we started that way, and then went to see people in Boston, and eventually we began going to New York to bring in people. And some of the people that you worked with, Mary Proctor, you probably remember Mary, and of course Chris Dolman, who directed a number of really, really terrific productions there. So we began to, but we also tried to remain true to a local, community of artists, Julie Lisnett, Ken Stack, and those folks were integral as well in keeping the quality up as well as a connection to the community.
One of the big decisions that you made, and when people talk about the redevelopment of downtown Bangor, they often point to a number of things, but one they always leave out, I think, is the Maine Shakespeare Festival that you started, which was really the first time anybody thought, to my recollection, of doing anything artistic down on that waterfront. And it was a process, but it became one of the biggest events of the year every summer in downtown Bangor.
Yeah, it was one of those things that just seemed like it was a little quixotic, of course, because there was nothing down there. It was just those old railroad yards. And but some of the people at the city, I have to say, were really marvelous in like the community development departments and things there. And they saw that it could be something that that could work, not necessarily become anything huge or anything. But and so we got their help in, just developing the area, literally bringing in bulldozers and moving some earth around and getting things sort of prepared for an audience. And, and a lot of people came. And I think it was the beginning of the waterfront developing in a way that it has eventually, you know, when I've been back to Bangor, I've just been thrilled to see how the waterfront developed. And it's such an asset, you know, to have a waterfront like that. So it was great. It was a lot of fun. And as you know, it could be kind of rough out there.
Well, and it was also, you know, how many theater opportunities do you have where you get to learn and understand and be prepared for train protocols?
Yes. You know, I was thinking about that the other day, because in this production of Romeo and Juliet, Juliet, you know, at the end, she pretends to be dead. And so she drinks this potion that knocks her out. And so they think she's dead. So they put her in the tomb, you know. So anyway, this young lady who plays Juliet is out there, and she's under a sheet on this, you know, bier in a tomb. And then Romeo is going to come and rescue her. It doesn't really work out for them, but I don't want to spoil it. So anyway, she was lying there on the sheet, and I was thinking, yeah, I remember we had a protocol for dead people on stage.
Right. Don't remember get up that? If I mean, you're if dead. Don't get comes, up.
Yeah, if the train comes and you're dead, you can't get up. But if the train comes and you're alive, you just walk off stage and you wait for the train. And one night, during Richard III, pretty sure, there was the dead body of the dead king who's being marched off to be buried. And they march in, and this poor actor is laying under this sheet. And in that moment, a train came, and then it got stuck because somebody had parked their car too close to the tracks. And so the train is sitting there, blah, 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 you know, with its diesel engine. And I mean, this went on for like 20 minutes until they found the person who owned the car and could move it. And then the train could go by. And this poor guy who's under the sheet, I don't remember who it was, had to lie there because our rule was, if you're dead, you just stay under, you know, you just stay on stage and lay there dead.
When you came to town, you were doing shows in the old building that so many of us have fond memories of at 183 Main Street. We loved it there. But you also made the decision that there was an opportunity to grow the theater. And with that came the acquisition of the historic Bangor Opera House.
Indeed. Yeah, it was a pretty scary time for us, I think, as an organization, because we were taking on this big building that needed a lot of work. And but it did seem like a natural development for the organization to move into the Opera House. And then for a while, I think probably you remember, we were in both.
Right.
And we were schlepping lights and huge dimmer racks and everything back and forth, doing some shows in the little theater and some shows in the big theater. And then I think wisely, we made the decision to try to find somebody else. And luckily, the bank next door, Merrill Merchants at the time, I don't know if it's still that bank there, but anyway, they bought the building from us, and then they developed it and did a really remarkable job of preserving the architecture of that wonderful old building and incorporating their offices into it. So, happy ending.
Absolutely. When you think back, you were involved in so many remarkable productions in your time here. Are there a couple that stand out to you?
I do still remember loving the work of the actors and everybody, the design team in Angels in America.
Oh.
That sticks with me a lot. Sweeney Todd, we did that big musical in the small theater at 183. And that was, it kind of made it all the more powerful, I think, that it was sort of right in your face like that. And boy, the community came out for both of those productions. It was, you know, Angels was a little controversial, you know, I think.
It was, but am I right that at least for a time, it was also the most attended play in the history of Penobscot Theater?
I think so, yeah, because, I mean, it just, people came out like crazy. You know, we did that play as part of a the season that year had a theme, and the theme was Pulitzer Prize winners. And so it was a lot of different, you know, it was like Streetcar Named Desire, it was Glengarry Glen Ross, it was Harvey, it was Our Town. And the thing that I thought was so interesting was Our Town and Angels did pretty much a similar kind of business. And you would think that our town would just go through the roof, but Angels went through the roof in pretty much the same way. And I think in a way, those two plays are like, they are American stories. They're just about 100 years apart.
Yeah.
And so it's like the community recognized that this play is about our time and or our, you know, our town in our time, and our town was, you know, about events 100 years prior.
I love the production that you were also in of Amadeus, which, of course, was a show you knew well, having been a member of the original Broadway cast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I got, boy, it's one of those great perks when you run the theater. You have to give yourself the parts that, that are really good. And so, yeah, I got to play Salieri, which was great fun.
And can you share the story that you told me before we came on the air, which you've told before, so it's not a downtown exclusive, but the F. Murray Abraham story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, F. Murray Abraham, as people probably know, most recently probably saw him in White Lotus.
Mm.
But the other day, we our union, SAG-AFTRA, is on strike right now. So some of us members, go and walk on picket lines from time to time. So I went to the picket lines down on 18th Street in the city, and I walked around the corner, and I'm walking toward the picket situation, and I see Murray Abraham standing there chatting with a guy. And when I first got out of grad school, I was selected to go to Baltimore, Maryland, to be in Cyrano de Bergerac, starring Murray Abraham. Now, he wasn't a big movie star back then, but he was well known as a great theater actor. And so anyway, Murray was Cyrano, and I was playing some small part. And I got a call from the New York casting people who had seen me in my grad school final auditions to come and audition for a new play in New York. So I took the train up from Baltimore, I auditioned for this play, and I go back to Baltimore, and I think, well, that's that. And a week later or so, the phone rings, and it's them, and they want me to be in this new play in New York. And I find out in that phone call, it's a Broadway play, and it's blah, 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 and Ian McKellen is going to play the lead, and Jane Seymour, and Tim Curry, and all these names that I knew. And so I went, you know, I told a few people, like, hey, I got this great job in New York. So the word spreads, and one night I'm in my little dressing room, not a little dressing room, a big chorus dressing room with about 12 other guys, and I'm at my little mirror, and I feel someone tap me on the shoulder, and I turn around, it's Murray. And he's come up to our dressing room, and he says, hey, I hear you got a show in New York, Broadway show. I said, I did. It's a new play of some kind. It's coming over from England. It's called Amadeus. And he said, Amadeus. And, you know, said, well, you know, good luck and congratulations. And off he went. And I said to myself, years later, I thought, I wonder if I was the first person to ever say Amadeus to Murray Abraham, which, of course, would change his life when he won the Academy Award for playing Salieri in the movie.
I love it. I love it. What a great story.
But anyway, I saw Murray on the picket line. And I waited to talk to him until he finished up a conversation with another guy. And I told him this story. And I said, I wanted to thank you for your kindness back then and, you know, and relate the little story to him. So that was kind of fun to close that loop.
Now, that is fabulous. Well, Mark, before we let you go, as we salute the 50th anniversary of Penobscot Theater, what did that time here in Bangor mean to you?
It was so important. It was so, I mean, the sense of being in the community in so many ways. And by the community, I don't even mean just Bangor. I mean the state of Maine. As you know, I sat on the Maine Arts Commission, and so I was, you know, connected to other arts organizations. And it was the real strong sense of being part of something. And you don't quite get that in, you know, the commercial theater or in TV and film, where you come in and you do your thing and off you go. That was really important to me, to feel welcome and also perhaps a contributor to everybody kind of pulling in the same direction on behalf of their community. So that was, that's the best way I could probably describe it.
Well, Mark, it's great to talk with you as always. Thank you so much for being with us on a show day as well. Break legs tonight. Hope it goes well for you.
Thank you, Rich. It's great talking to you, and all my best to all my friends in Maine.